What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on Crowdcast. We're live on YouTube. Or maybe we're coming to you later as a podcast in all the places that podcasts come from. Now, you might notice Justin isn't quite here yet. He should be coming in hot a little later in the show. But Pete, while we're waiting for him, and before we bring our amazing guests on for tonight, can I jump ahead a little bit? Is that okay with you?
Let's jump ahead.
All right. Normally, we wait to talk about what we're drinking until after audience questions, but I wanted to bring this up because it's very rapidly melting next to me. So Brett Macris, a.k.a. Stray Bullet, our resident chef, got this cookbook. Do you call it a cookbook for drinks? Drink book?
Drink book, yeah.
Cook drink?
Cocktail book.
Cocktail book. Novel?
Nah.
Sci-fi novel? Anyway, it's called Gotham City Cocktails. It's by a guy named Andrea Darlington. And we had a vote on our Patreon Slack. If you're not part of that,
Patreon.com. Man, get in on that Slack action.
Patreon.com/comicbookclub. And tonight, by popular demand, we're doing a drink called The Tailfin. Should I read what The Tailfin is?
Yeah.
Is that copyright infringement because I'm reading the
book? Probably.
Okay, well, here we go. We're going to live on the wild side. The description here is inspired by Batman's classic car.
Hold up your drink so we get to
It's going
to
be the reveal. The Batmobile is the single greatest piece of equipment prowling the streets of Gotham City. While it's the cause of some anxiety, the beast is also a source of great pride for the city's residents. A few cocktails have been created over the years to glorify this impressive vehicle, but none is as famous as the Tailfin. The cobbled ice in the drink represents the streets of Gotham City, and the two cherries resemble cars' taillights, which are all most people ever see.
Whoa.
And to give you the ingredient list.
That's a little much.
It's a little much, but you got mint leaves. You muddle them on the bottom of the glass, rocks glass or a julep cup. You top with crushed ice, pour rye whiskey, Campari, dry vermouth and sweet vermouth, Benedictine if you want. I did use Benedictine because I do like it. Over the ice, you stir until the glass is cold, and then you garnish with a mint sprig and cherries on a cocktail pick. Yes, what's up, Pete?
Of all those ingredients that you listed, how many of those have alcohol in it?
Many of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Does the vermouth have alcohol?
Yes, vermouth has alcohol.
Okay. I don't drink fancy drinks. I don't know these things.
Wait. Hey.
There JT. You go. Hey.
Very nice. Did you make yourself a Tailfin? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, sort of. I just got out of the car coming back from Memorial Day weekend. And boy, did I make this quickly.
Yes. Well, you have, I should mention, so this is mine, which has started to melt a little bit. Yeah. I have the wrong kind of cherries. I only had maraschino cherries at home. You have the
urine sample that he's showing us.
Pete's been drinking it all night. It's disgusting.
Look at those taillights, baby.
Yeah, that's pretty good. What do you think?
First sip, great. I don't have mint or some other of the ingredients, but I do have a cocktail in front of me.
Yeah, it's very strong at first, I would say. Very strong, but I actually, it's like also extremely bitter because you got the Campari and the Benedictine. But I like it, and it gets better as I go along as I'm getting towards the mint. Big fan.
I'm into it as well. But I've just got out of a car with two children for, say, about 7.5 hours. So I could be drinking pure gasoline.
Well, come in to our car with two children for 7.5 hours.
Yes, my first kids are here. Let's get anybody have to go to the bathroom? Because we're not stopping again.
So, yes, if you want to get in on this, maybe we'll do this every week. Maybe we'll have a Gotham City cocktail every week. Patreon.com/comicbookclub.
Who's got that kind of money?
But
restock on Benedictine again.
Justin, we have a bit of a theme this week.
Yes.
Two-part theme. One, both of our guests are Chris's, and both of them know you.
Yes.
So we're going to bring in our first one here. He is the founder of Urbaname, which is a new comic book company. Chris Walker is our guest, and you used to work with him, right, Justin?
I acted in a project that based in a comic book store.
Ooh. So you weren't a line producer on this one.
Purely treading the boards, the cinematic boards. in Chris's project.
Cool. Well, I have prompted him to come in and keep talking about the project.
So wait, were you a classically trained comic book nerd? Like, what was your role here in this?
I was just bringing, I played a nerd.
Hey, Chris, how are you doing?
He was a little more than a line producer. He was like the lead.
He's the lead, that's right.
Yeah. The lead. Well, a lot of fun.
Justin line produces on most projects, right?
Yeah, wow. That's not accurate. It is inaccurate.
Wow.
Well, Chris, welcome to the show. Very excited to have you here. Excited to talk about Urbanime. So to give the ground level of what this is, new comic book company, different take on a comic book company. What's kind of what's your pitch for it for people who don't know about it?
So what I say is that we're a culture times comic book company in the sense that we are a culture-driven media company. The goal is to empower Black and brown audiences through storytelling. So instead of just making superheroes, we say culture is the hero. And so if you think about it that way, it's really kind of comic-centric publication. So it could be kind of a long format, kind of classic superhero genre fiction story, but still grounded in culture. So you know, the leads come from kind of experiences that, you know, are really kind of, you know, with the name Urbanime, just that kind of urbanity. You know, when I first thought about the brand, very kind of skate, hip hop, you know, even punk, that sensibility. But as it's grown, you know, thinking about what are the different types of publications we can make. So what you have is what we call the mixtape. And so the mixtape, think of it more like a visual mixtape, like a metaphor of themes and subjects. So it's more of an editorial theme. So think about like a Complex or a Frank 151. If it was illustration based and that illustration was comic books, cartoony panels that use comic book art to tell culture based stories. So those are kind of the two publications that we do. And every once in a while, we'll do what we call an EP, which is like a short drop. So we did a project celebrating National Air Max Day with like sneakerheads. So really, again, leaning into that kind of urban culture, urban sensibility, and taking that that kind of sense of, you know, I mean, all of us, I think, are in New York, that kind of urban sensibility that's around us every day. So that's really the goal. And then empowering those audiences, making them the heroes of the story, whether it's them or the culture.
Now, the first project that launched, which we're, if you're watching live, we're looking at here, is called Relic. What was the idea behind that? And why was it important to use that as the launch title?
Yeah, so Relic, we did a preview of Relic in the mixtape. So that's what we're showing here is the mixtape. And, you know, really... all of the new comic book fans, right? There's a lot of anime and manga fans. Sure. And so I thought it was a good way to kind of pull them into the brand and tell stories. And, you know, I always joke, it's like, I don't know what Dragon Ball Z did to, like, Black teenage males, but it was like a brain bomb that went off. It's like, it just never come back from it. So, you know, it's like a lot of, you know, things pulled from that. I was a big anime fan growing up. You know, everybody compares that character to the character in Ninja Scroll. He's actually more like a, when we were playing around with him, I was like, take Evangelion and put like a rock armor around the Evangelion robot. Yeah. So I think when I say that, you can kind of see that sensibility more. But it was really just a way to launch, knowing that there was this new kind of fandom that was very urban, very kind of hip hop and skate. I thought this was a way to speak to it, bringing in that kind of anime sensibility and mixing it with urban culture.
That's awesome.
Taking sort of a bigger view, and you touched on this a little bit before, but you got Relic, you've got these other titles. What are you looking for when you're putting together a launch slate?
You know, we've been talking about this a lot, and we say we look at a cultural year versus like a calendar year. Oh, this is something that we do too, really into, again, bringing those sensibilities. So we do fashion spreads. So I had a friend of mine who's a fashion stylist, and she literally styled the characters from the book. So she was like, I need to know their bios, their names.
That's cool.
For each character
based on what they were into. And so then, you know, you can download this if you go to our website in our drop section, and it's discoverable. So you can actually click and find all the styles. And there are a lot of Black-owned, Black and brown-owned beauty and fashion brand. So just, again, pulling that cultural element in. And so that's
I love that. The completest, you go deep there. That's great.
there's some real deep cuts in this. I mean, like, some of the brands are just, like, you know, tiny in the sense that, like, you know, they're very in that kind of niche in that space. So there's, like, you know, I think it's Hardware. They're like a Black-owned skate brand out of New York, you know, so there's probably like a couple thousand people that know about them. And she was like, we need to put this in here because they're like what's hot right now. So it's a lot of fun. I've always been culture based. You know, I did a lot of stuff when I was younger, doing like illustrations for album covers. So we did some stuff for Diddy and KRS-One. Also worked with B12 and Eminem. And then we also worked on, when I say we, I often work, I'm very collaborative, so I often work with a lot of teams or other creators that I like. We also did the first Ghostface Killer graphic novel. So been doing this for a while, and this is like really kind of pulling it together. So again, to answer your question, it's looking at that cultural year. So you know, there's Air Max Day, Relic, we really want to get it out. We put it out at the end of Black History Month, and so we're working on it's June now, so this is Black Music Month, so we have a big program in store for Black Music Month, again pulling comics, and you know, we're all comic book fans here, right? So you know, it's that whole Scott McCloud theory, right? It's like comics are one of the most powerful storytelling mediums, you know, out there. We're just using them a lot to tell, you know, superhero stories, but they can tell a lot of other stories.
Chris, I feel like you work in so many, or over the years, you've worked in so many different parts of the media. Is this sort of you like pulling everybody together? Like, all right, let's do this, guys.
It is. We got, you'll get the phone call after this. Like, thanks for the reconnect, guys. I got work for Justin.
Let's do it. I'm ready. Yeah. I grew a goatee. I'm different now. I wasn't ready.
Like, this is like HBO Max Showtime, Justin.
It's, that's
like,
what I'm saying. I'm a little edgier, right? A little more dangerous.
Like, it's like, it's not the Mickey Mouse Club anymore. Like, he did a naked music video. He's like, yo, I'm out there. I'm in the streets.
I'm deadly serious. I'm the villain. I'm the reveal at the end. We flash back to the early. I'm not nice.
I love
you. I'm a monster.
I love it.
When you're trying to do something like this where you're being so reactive to the culture, you may be aware of this, but comics take a while to put out. So how do you balance those two things in terms of the schedule of releasing a comic, but also making something that feels current, feels fresh?
They do. And I think when you look at the medium, the long format stuff takes time, right? So like to put out the next issue of Relic is going to take some time. We have a series that we're working on called Codex. That's about a young hacker who hacks like the source code to reality. We want to really base it in like STEM and like Black women in tech. So that's going to take a while, just doing the research, making sure that we have a good creative team. Shout outs to Ashley Wood. I've been talking to her about possibly doing some character designs for it. So that sort of stuff takes time, but the more reactive stuff, I think it's designing it to work. And I'd done a little bit of magazine stuff. So to talk to what Justin said before, I worked in magazines, published a magazine before, Phantom magazine. So then it's like deconstructing, you know, the comic book process. So, you know, not to reveal too much with the mixtape we have coming out for Black Music Month, but we're doing a story with the Apollo. And so I'm building that as like the main story, and then I'll tell different stories around it. So we've been talking to School ED and talking to him about, you know, so a lot of cool stuff. So it's like, how do you not draw 50 pages, right? So then it's like, it was funny, you guys would love this. I was looking at Tokyo Pop. Do you remember the manga chapter books?
Yeah.
Right? So deep cuts, right? So I'm looking at manga chapter books and saying like, how do you pull illustration and prose, make it interesting from a magazine standpoint? How do you design it so that it's fun, right? It's very scannable. There's like really cool art. So thinking about things that way, because to your point, it does take time. But if you've got really good comic book artists, shout out to Ryan Adagawa, who I work with a lot in Herald Edge. You know, I think if you have a sharp description of what you want, you know, they can just sit down and do it. And so, you know, I do a lot of things like pulling mood boards and art boards and references. So when they sit down and work, they're very, very focused.
What about release, the way that you're putting out the books? You know, something that we talk about a lot on the show is, frankly, that the way that mainstream comics come out can be very archaic. Pete's going to yell at me right now for saying that. But I do think there are some things that are very behind the times versus you talking about a comic book as a mixtape. A mixtape, obviously, is going to be distributed very differently from, say, here's a sampler that we're putting in comic shops. So what, if anything, are you doing that is... coming at it in a different way.
And I appreciate that question. You know, the monthly comics are hard, I think, for independent publishers, right? So I was talking to, or I was on a panel, you know, I think I'm all cool. I'm like, oh, I've cracked the code. And I forgot what I was on, but there's some other Black creators, I think it was Virtuous Con, and they're like, yeah, like, this is how you do it when you're not cash flush the way a Marvel or DC is, right? Like, you put out these, I call them chapter books, right? But it's like, when we were growing up, it's like, it's meaty enough so that you feel like you got something, but it's incomplete enough that you look forward to the next one coming out. And that's what I've noticed a lot of independent publishers, especially the smaller ones, if you're not like an IDW or, you know, that size, where it's like, I need enough to kind of get my story and my character out there, get people excited, and then I can keep them engaged in, on social media or small releases along the way. So I think there's that. Really focus on digital publishing, doing Amazon Kindle as a way, just because, as you can tell with what we're doing, we're also focused on, you know, not only the direct market, but thinking about people who might be a music fan or a skate fan or someone who's not as familiar with the direct market or Comixology. So even Comixology was a great platform and Kindle's built on it. People just know that Kindle name, right? So instead of like having to go and download Comixology, you know, hey, this is on Kindle. Great, let me go download it. I have Kindle. So it's making small choices like that. And then with the digital, you know, we want to be really sharp on, you know, who likes our book. You know, fantasy graphic novel the next day, like Nick Leslie.
Like, maybe, does this help? We sort of massage the Wi-Fi a little bit.
Ooh, I don't know, Chris. I don't know if you can hear us, but there we go.
Yeah, so you froze for a second.
For 1 second.
I was saying, you know, once with that, like once we've discovered and we know our base, I think it's about then making print, right, and making collectibles and making it fun. So if you're a Relic fan and we go to print, how do we make that print really cool for you? Because when you have analog things in a digital space, they're precious, right? And if you know that as a collector or a fan, I want to make it, you know, that much more of an experience. So, you know, bring back the old days, the 90s, right? Like now you can do a metallic, you know, run or all those special things that we like, because it's like, no, I really like this. And it's enough to go out and like you're on Patreon and the other platforms, and you can take it to a platform. And instead of just like, hey, you know, give us $10 for this, it's like, no, like you're a Relic fan, we're doing something, you know, really special for you, and it's super limited edition, so then you can go stunt on other people.
You collect the people. Well, that's what I love about it, is like just putting something out there where you're bringing in all these different things that you love and just seeing who responds to it. Like that's the hardest part of anything, is just having the thing and throwing it into the center of the circle and being like, where are we at with this? Like, who's interested? What do you like? What don't you like? Let's keep working on this.
Yeah. And, you know, you've seen the majors do it too. I think Marvel and DC have gotten really smart about it. I really loved, I don't know if they do it anymore, Top Cow, when they did the pilot season.
Yeah.
So you've seen them, you know, I look at everybody and what they're doing. I think Marvel and DC have iterated different ways where they'll make like smaller projects, or they'll put like 5 or 6 shorts and they'll kind of get a feel for a character. So to your point, Justin, it's about doing that test and learn to kind of, and sometimes you might have a character that people really love, but you know, it's not a big enough base for that character to stand alone. So then you try and put that character in more books, right? So that person who, you know, really has an affinity, they're like, all right, well, they're not getting their own series, but I'll read the Avengers, I'll read Spider-Man when they show up.
Yeah.
Other than Relic, which is out, I believe, what else is coming down the pike?
So coming down the pike, we have this big program lined up for Black Music Month. So we're very excited. We say it's our music, our story, in the sense that, you know, to celebrate Black Music Month is also a celebration of the people and the experiences and the culture that created the music. And so that's a big thing that we're doing now. If you go to the website, you can sign up for a new music takeover. So we have some really cool partners, Sway Calloway from Sway in the Morning. So he's been promoting us. There's a company called Digital
Access. He's got the answers.
He has the answers for us. I'm happy about it.
Yeah,
he knows everything. It's usually a yes, I'll do that. And I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, man, it's no problem.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's nice being like a new company and having someone like him. But DigiWax is DigiWax is a record sharing or a record pool company where DJs literally talk about records, right? So when you think about Black music and that kind of cultural heritage, part of it is the conversations that people have about music and how it cultivates sound. So you'll have a chance to be like a fly on the wall and kind of hear DJs talk about it. And they're like club DJs and record DJs from around the country. We're going to have like an artist masterclass where we'll have conversations on Clubhouse about how to work on your career. So those are things that we're doing. And then we'll cap it off with like a mixtape, pulling all those conversations together in an editorial. So it should be a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
That's awesome, man.
We have a Codex, and then we have a couple other titles that, you know, I'm always happy to talk about. But, you know, we're trying to get these two out the door. We do have a project that we're working on with Sway called Swayverse. And it's all about Sway and like his stories of hip hop. So he's like the hip hop
monster.
And we'll be announcing
that. And he's got a million stories. Yeah. I worked with him on one thing a few years ago. And man, he just knows everyone and everything. Dude, and he'll just go.
Dude, he like, there's no one in hip hop that you can't mention that he doesn't know. I'm hoping he'll make the Obama call and be like, Obama, you like comic books?
That would be amazing. That's fantastic. Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show. Sure. Good luck with everything. Excited to check out all of the titles.
Yeah, can't wait to check it out.
Thank you. So cool, man.
And if I can give a plug, urbanime.com, go there, go to the drops, download, plug in. It'll be a lot of cool stuff. So
awesome. Thank you, Chris. Right. Have a good night.
Thanks a lot.
Take care, man.
See you, Chris. Right. Great to catch up.
Good to see you, Justin.
Later.
All right, there we go. Once again, that was Chris Walker from Urbanime. You can check out the mixtape is free to download right now, and it'll give you a sampler of a bunch of titles. So definitely check that out. Very cool. Why don't we pull in your second Chris?
Well, it's not like I purposefully cultivated this. This isn't a show about me. I was 8 minutes late or whatever. Like, it's not like it's a star vehicle for me.
Listen, just because you just got off of your yacht and then grabbed yourself a drink, got on the show.
It's fair. And I swear, I know I'm dressed like some sort of golf person. Yuppie. But I didn't. This is all just a series of accidents that have us here having a great time.
Well, our second guest who is making his way into the stream here is a friend of the show. We've had him on many times before, Chris Dunn. He's also a former writer for the WWE. He just left. So I know a bunch of you are wrestling fans out there. If you're over on YouTube watching, you got any questions about what goes on behind the scenes of the WWE, drop them in the comments there. Same thing here on Crowdcast and ask a question. We talked to him before the show, and Chris was very specific. He's ready to break the whole thing wide open. Very negative. No, he's positive about the experience. But if you guys are curious about anything that happens behind the scenes, definitely let us know as Chris makes his
way. I'm just texting. I'm resending him the link to make sure he apparently didn't work when he just clicked on it. So we might have a minute to talk about other Chris's out in the world. Oh, here it is.
There you go. Chris,
look at this.
Hey, guys.
Chris number two, but Chris number one in our hearts. How are you doing, Chris?
Yeah, I was. You saved it because earlier when you started the show, Alex, and you said I was Justin's friend, I was hurt. I've known you for over a decade.
That's true. Justin booked you.
How many Elephant Larry shows have I seen? Like,
fair enough. Fair enough.
I may not have a fancy Gotham City drink, but like, we've definitely had a couple adult sodas.
Wow. Coming at us from Stately Dunn Manor, Chris Dunn.
Yeah.
From the porch.
Mostly from the
porch.
Well,
since I've left WWE, I picked up a job as a billionaire playboy. Nothing else on top of that.
That place is holding you back.
I love it.
Jokes aside, thank you guys for having me on. Like, I've the show has been a big part of my life for a very long time, and you guys are three of my favorite people. So I'm excited to do this, man. Especially Pete.
Wow.
Chris, well, it's great to see you, man.
Yeah, it is very good to see you.
I'm just trying not to be like a Justin Tyler crony. I'm trying to, play to everyone. Yeah,
I don't have cronies here. I'm just a guy. We barely know each other.
Justin doesn't have any friends here. Let's be very clear.
Exactly. Enemies. This is a hot little lion's den for me.
Yeah.
By the way, you shouldn't have taken off the handkerchief. It was getting a good vibe in the chat.
Yeah.
I saw the tombstone. It's called an ascot.
Yes. Sorry. When I'm on the yacht, when the helicopter lands to drive me here, it keeps the wind from getting into my goatee.
Smart.
Sorry. It's been windy all day on the helipad.
So, Chris, let's start off with kind of the obvious thing here, like the meeting thing here. You worked at the WWE writing for years. What just general broad strokes, what was the experience like, and why did you eventually decide to leave?
It was a really positive experience. Like, I grew up a big wrestling fan and then on and off as an adult. And I think, like, we're all huge comic book fans here. And I think, like, if you look at comic books, we have like years and decades of stories with the same character. You kind of have that with WWE too, where it's like, a generational story that like goes back in decades. Like, I got to work with like a ton of people I watched on TV as a kid, from like Stone Cold Steve Austin to Triple H to Kurt Angle and Shawn Michaels. Like, they've been in my life since I was like Shawn Michaels since I was like 5 or 6. Like, and I am an old man now.
No doubt. You're definitely the oldest one here.
You look great.
I don't know about that. Thank you. Let's talk more about that. It was cool to get to contribute to it, and like I know how much I loved it, and hopefully, it takes a lot of people to put, like, from the talent to the writers to like the production crew. It's kind of like a traveling band to an extent, and it takes a lot of things to make a show go right, and hopefully. Yeah, I got to contribute a little bit and like help make people enjoy it like I enjoyed it.
I love what you're saying about the way the similarities to comics, because the pace at which you're creating story, I feel like there are very few entertainment anything that moves at the same pace that I feel like comic books move at, where it's like constantly like, where's the story going? How are we crossing this over with different stories? And just like talking to you over the course of your time there, like, it was wild the pace you guys were making stuff, let alone producing stuff. Like, you're a writer, but you're ending up on set producing a remote piece with like 9 different things happening. Like, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, it was wild. So like, Justin and I have known each other for a very long time, and like for years he had a live a fantastic show at UCB East. They actually opened the theater every Friday night. And help close the theater too. And like, when I started working for WWE, the workload was so intense. Like, you don't have a lot of free time because it's 52 weeks a year. It's now 7 hours a week between USA and Fox when you include all 3 shows. So a lot of the times, like, I would be like writing in the subway, and then like writing like at the bar before the show. And then like, if there was a comic that I knew that wasn't going to be great, I would go to the green room, write, and then
just list them, just get it all done.
Let's save that for, maybe
post show after.
Sometimes you tell, oh, great set. And then,
you were in the bar writing. I wish I could name writing a wrestler, but I can't.
Drunkenly writing.
Yeah.
Well, just to take a step back and a sort of bigger, broader view question for people who don't know, like myself, I think, what are you actually writing on a WWE show? Is it producing the segments? Is it feeding lines to the wrestlers so that maybe they can like respond in the moment? Or does it just vary?
It's really like a jack of all trades job. Unfortunately, during my time there, I was a master of none. But essentially you kind of need to be able to do everything, right? Like, when Justin was talking about like you're a breaking story, and it could be a story you're doing like that is a year build, or it can be a story for just like that week. Because like you're always on and it's never stopping. And then too, like, you know, if somebody tears their ACL, like everything, a year worth of stuff can like go up in smoke real quick. So like, you know, if I'm the writer of Mar of Easttown, Kate Winslet tearing her ACL isn't keeping me up at night.
By the way, I don't want to say that the wrestling on that show was fake, I think. I think Kate was faking it. I'm sorry.
How dare you?
At the end of the day, I'm just happy Wawa got love from an Academy Award winning actress.
Rolling Rock. Hashtag Rolling Rock.
Yeah,
gang.
So essentially, like, yeah, hashtag Rolling Rock. They're sponsoring the after party on another Zoom. So it's like you're breaking story, and then like it's a very dialogue heavy job, where you're essentially writing all the dialogue and during the week when you get the TV, and then like day of the TV, you're working with the wrestlers on rewriting that stuff, and like you're getting rewrites, you know, from various people who are above you, like, and then too, it's like you're producing the backstages and the in-ring segments and on headset giving, like, trying to stay ahead of the TV truck, telling them what's going to happen, because, you know, it's just such an immense show, and it's such like a huge production where it's like, and you're always like, you know, when you start a new job, like you're usually in television, you usually start in pre-production. There is no pre-production here. You're just always in production. So you can't kind of really map stuff out and plan stuff out. You just got to like roll with the punches and adjust during the day. And because there are like so many different people involved too, it's a lot like SNL in a way where you're rewriting day of on set all day, even as the show's going on occasionally.
And as a line producer, I get it. It's difficult. let me check. I didn't grow up as a wrestling fan, but Chris, following your work, and I've gone to see SmackDown a couple times, and actually was the day before pandemic. Chris
March 13th.
Yeah, we were in Brooklyn, man, at that crazy wrestling event. Yeah.
Chris got us tickets to see SmackDown, and Alex, Pete, and I, it's the last picture on my phone before pandemic, is the three of us idiots in the crowd being like, yeah!
Well, I remember, though, we talked about it, we're like, should we be here? Yeah, it's free tickets.
Let's get a giant
It was great.
Giant
it was so much fun.
So good.
So thank you.
Yeah, it was.
We're here to say thank you, but let me just say, like, what I've been amazed the couple times I've seen it with just the theatricality of it, and as a classically trained actor, theatricality is really where my head goes, and it's stunning the things that you guys pull off on a day of basis is wild, and the fact that it's not like there's a rehearsal process, all of the actual wrestling moves and physicality is just something they're in, like, it's like improv, they're in constant physical communication, able to pull it off in an arena with, you know, three cameras on them and 1,000 people maybe cheering them on. Like, it's wild.
Yeah, when you're on, like, when you're on headset there and you hear, like, Kevin Dunn, who is, you know, one of the showrunners of the show, he has, like, that dude has, like, the toughest job in all of television. And every week he crushes it and does, like, a great job. Like, you just hear him and it's, like, he's dealing with, like, more, like, you know, a bunch of us here have worked in TV production and like been on a headset and been in control rooms. Like you never hear anything like being on a headset in WWE with like all the, like, from like having to hit the pyro to the music to being like five steps ahead on like the promo. You know, that guy and like their director, like Marty Miller, are just like really some of the most talented people in all of television.
Now, Justin was mentioning just dealing with the crowd and everything. Obviously that's been very different during the pandemic. How did that challenge you as a writer, having to tweak and change things when there wasn't a crowd on nearly the same level?
So it definitely had an impact on the product, and it was a hard adjustment at first. Essentially, when the pandemic hit, the first episode I did was because I was on Raw at the time. It was a 316 day, which was supposed to be this big event for Stone Cold Steve Austin. Yeah. And like, it was very hard to kind of figure out that promo. Obviously, like, Steve had like what he wanted to do. And usually when you're working with a talent that big, they kind of take the lead on what they want to say, what they want to do. But it was just like very odd and like off-putting. And then as time went on, like, there's a couple different eras of like pandemic WWE. Like, there's the Performance Center, which, like, thank God, you know, the company had that, because, like, you had a place to do TV. But then, like, it definitely was hurting, like, the product a lot. And, like, well, it definitely took back from the product because the audience is such a huge thing. So, like, you know, for example, like, I helped do these offsites with, like, the Street Profits and the Viking Raiders, like, all year, just because we wanted to get out of the arena, just because of lack of fans. And, you know, it actually, from a comic book standpoint, it culminated in, like, a really cool cinematic match, which, you know, had the both teams kind of, like, team up like a B-movies Avengers that was, like, had a lot of comic book elements. But then, like, you know, not having the crowds in the Performance Center was, like, really rough. But I think the positive is, like, you know, you were doing a lot more backstage and a lot more intimate promos in, like, very cool settings. And I think...
Oh, no. They shut him down.
These exactly. Vince is like, get him out of there. Like,
Pull the feed.
These Chris's are struggling with their Wi-Fis.
Yeah, they really are. Oh, this is stupid. Do you want to pick it up, Justin? You want to tell about?
Yeah, I'll just finish up. But we rehearsed this before, and he wrote all these lines, so I'll just finish them up.
This is fake. This is fake. I get it. It's all scripted.
Yes, this
here,
is
wait,
all.
I'm gonna scripted. I'm gonna kick Chris out and then welcome him back in again. This will be fun nice. For the audio podcast.
Yeah. Well, we could fill it. Pete, how are you? I feel like I haven't talked to you in at least.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, it's been a while. You know, doing all right. I just got off the road trip with my kids in the car, and it was just so much stress.
That's me. You're confusing me and
right.
you
no,
again.
No, yeah, yeah.
I'm
that's
that one.
You. You're you. Yeah, yeah. Man, I'm me. Yeah, my fault.
What are you drinking that looks like urine?
It's a little bit of the Mystic Mango Mania and vodka.
Mystic
Mango Mania?
Oh, yeah, what is... You're really pushing the borders of... just beverages in general.
You know, constantly looking for a new way to introduce vodka into my life.
Now, Pete, you grew up as a wrestling fan.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, old school. Yeah, as Chris was saying, Chris number two. You know, we're old, so yeah. Like I grew up, you know, Andre the Giant. Coco Beware, the Iron Sheik, that kind of stuff. You know,
just to give people context, this is the first timeline in Young Rock, not the second timeline or the third timeline.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to explain it so everybody's
look at
it.
I was trying to speak the language, trying to really connect.
Of an NBC comedy that nobody watches? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, this is sort of like a Young Sheldon situation. Is what
yeah, yeah, for sure. But yeah, I used to love it as a kid, and especially, you know, with my friends, we would all try to, you know, recreate the moves and stuff. And a lot of kids got hurt doing that. So it was good times.
Yeah. No, I'm familiar with the middle school party where it's just like a bunch of couch cushions on the floor. It's like, all right.
Yeah, let's do this. Yeah.
Let's try to do this. And it's like, well, someone broke their clavicle. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now we got to go to the hospital.
Yeah. All right. Here's what I think we're going to do, because we know Chris, and Chris is a good guy. Since he seems to be having some trouble going on getting back in here, why don't we move on with the show? And if he's able to hook back in, we'll just bring him back in and keep talking about wrestling. Sound good?
Wrestling.
That's great. He hasn't talked comics yet. I know he wants to.
Yes,
talk
that too. Yeah. So we'll definitely talk all of that stuff. In the meantime, we're going to move on to our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions.
Audience Christians. They're
nope,
questions.
Nope,
really, oh, no.
Nope.
They're not questions.
You've been on the
yacht
too long. Yeah. all right. Any audience questions? Same rules as questions for Chris apply. All you got to do is drop a question in the comments over on YouTube, and we will read them here on Crowdcast. Drop them and ask a question, and we will answer them. Oh, there's Chris.
Hey!
There we go. It's audience Christians, as we were talking about.
Real. You guys missed some good stuff.
Just you and the grasshoppers.
What? One thing I wanted to ask is, like, because wrestlers are so huge, like, was it hard for you to kind of, like, work on the script with them? Were you like, hey, listen, Stone Cold, why don't you try knocking two beers together? You know what I mean? Like, how
do you
were
mean
they
physically
open?
Huge or just huge in terms of fame?
Well, I'm just wondering, like, you know, like, is it hard to, like, give somebody notes who's clearly
taller than you?
Yeah, yeah. What's it like working with tall people?
Yes. Okay. No, it's they are very tall people, but a lot muscly. Of them are really awesome. Like it's, yeah, it's very much, you know, they do not miss core day. For me, like when wrestling works at its best between a writer and a wrestler, it's like a real collaboration. And I'm very lucky that like I worked with a group of wrestlers from like, you know, the Street Profits to Seth Rollins to, you know, Bianca Belair and R-Truth who, and like others who were just like really knew their characters, really understood the story. And really just wanted to make the best segment possible and best show possible. So like Seth Rollins, man, like I probably, unless I worked with him a lot over last year, I probably like never wrote a word for him, but I would give him suggestions. Like he was like, that guy like is such a good, like has such a good knowledge of story and what's going on through the whole show. And then like other wrestlers like need more help where you kind of like, you know, sometimes like the worst thing in wrestling is like, if you watch it, and I think it's a problem now, like essentially with like all, you know, WWE and the competition, there's just so much content and there's almost so much stuff you can say. So like, you don't want every promo to essentially be about like, I want to win the title. But because it just like after like 7 hours of WWE and like the 2 hours of AEW and like any of the like New Japan stuff or like any of that stuff, it's just, it's the same thing over and over again. So how can you tell a personal story within the constructs of a sports, you know, serialized story? And luckily, like I got to work with a lot of talent who understood how to do that.
Cool. We do have a couple of questions for you, actually. You kind of touched on this one, but Nelson Martinez over on YouTube says, are there any wrestlers in particular you enjoyed writing for most and also working with most?
Yeah, you know, the people I mentioned, like, you know, first off, like the probably the biggest and I talked to, who's, I'm still close to and I love dearly is R-Truth. He understands comedy better than most human beings I've ever met. And
oh, wow.
As like you guys can attest, I've been to a lot of comedy shows. That guy, he is, if there is a good joke, he is going to go for it and go like 100 miles per hour. And like, you know, the Profits are like, you know, some of the best guys you'll ever meet and like some of the most talented people you'll ever meet. And those guys are going to have amazing careers. And, you know, Bianca Belair just main evented WrestleMania, like, and was the first, you know, with Sasha Banks as like the two first black women to ever, you know, main event WrestleMania, which was really cool. And like Seth's great. And like, you know, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are also awesome. And there's a ton of awesome people.
Awesome. We met Hurricane Helms and he actually did our show from, cause you worked
there
with him.
That was one of my last, that was, I took pictures in the front row, like you guys did, you know, at wrestling as my last pandemic moment.
But he's a big comic fan and really incorporates, you know, brings comics into his wrestling work.
Well, speaking of which, we got a question here. Go ahead. Oh. No, please go ahead, Chris.
He had one of my favorite characters of all time. Like, I don't know if he talked about this on the show, but it was like really awesome. Like where his character was a superhero, but then he started interviewing people as like a Clark Kent style character, and it was so good. Like we did this insane web series for Old Spice right before I left. I made sure to get Hurricane in it as character just because. He's just the best.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
This is a question here on Crowdcast from Mike Spear Jr. Chris, have you ever checked out any wrestling comics like the WCW comic from the 90s or Headlocked?
I checked out the WCW comic. I had some WWF ones. I don't recall any of them. I definitely bought them, and I'm at my parents' house right now visiting their new place, and I'm going through my old comics, figuring out like what to sell and what not to, and I'm hoping to. Well, you know, everything's digital now, and I got my house is pretty crowded, so.
Well, wait.
I just tried to kill on the podcast, so I apologize.
Yes, you did. Well, yeah. On that note, how are you? We've talked about this so many times on the show before, but how are you deciding, like, what stays and what goes?
Yeah.
Oh man, it's. I think like anything I see that has like a personal connection to me, like I, you know, the Daredevil, a bunch of Daredevil stuff, like is stuff I grew up on, whether it's like the Bendis or the Brubaker, even the Frank Miller stuff. And like when I see that, I have a like a genuine reaction because I haven't looked at those in so long. Wow. And it's just like very nice to see and like take me back to like not just like being a fan of like the writing and like seeing, remembering how it influenced me as a writer, but also just like a time in my life. And like, yeah, you know, when I was like getting into comics and just like going to the, you know, the comic store every week, like Joker's Wild in like Ridgewood, New Jersey, and just like crushing it, you know.
Woo-hoo! Shout out.
Spending way too much money.
Oh yeah.
Well, the money was more valuable then, you know, that allowance based economy. It means more when you're dropping it.
Would you have...
And also Midtown Comics, if they're willing to give me any free shit.
Yes.
All right.
Nice. Stick around.
Another question over from YouTube. Yeah. Have you ever shared a cold beer with Stone Cold?
Ooh.
So no, but so like the pro. So I've only met Stone Cold once, and like, you know, when I said I worked on like that promo, like a ton of people work on it, so it just wasn't me. But after we were at the end of the show, like, you have like Austin celebrating the ring of this empty performance center. It's like a very surreal like piece of television to watch. And then like Becky Lynch, who, you know, was like the big star in the company at the before she went and had a baby, she came out, had like a beer with Stone Cold Steve Austin, they're cracking beers. Then after the show, the Street Profits came out and they took stunners, and there's like a beer bath around the ring. What I did do, I did try to get him. I was like, oh, like I carried the leftover beers over. And I was like, oh, thank you so much for the day. He was very nice. I was like hinting like, hey, do you want to have a beer with me? No. he left. Like I, by the way, I didn't flat out ask. I was just like, hey, like I have like these beers in my hand. And
nice.
But like
the offer was on the table.
Yeah. Like,
I'm a person. You're
just
a person.
I just took the three. Yeah. Like, let's just make a connection, see what's out there. But then I essentially took the three Stone Cold had his own beer line, and they're like his beers, IPAs. I took them back to the hotel and just drank them, thinking about like, oh, what this pandemic world will look like. And now we're here.
Wow.
We have another one over from YouTube. This is from Craven Cards and Comics. Do you collect autos or wrestling cards? Autos, I assume, autographs?
No.
Not cars?
Autographs, yeah.
You collect autos, and by that I mean vehicles that we drive in.
Automobiles?
Wrestlers who are like Transformers.
I mean, if that was real, yeah. I'd collect them too. I'd hunt them down, and I'd keep them in some sort of human car zoo.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
It's called a garage, Alex.
I don't collect autographs. I, you know, when it's your job to watch wrestling's great. I grew up on it. It had a big impact on me. Watching 7 hours a week of it for work is a lot. So I did not really like collect anything while I was there. I have a couple mementos of things I'm proud of. Like I have like a buzzer from the Bianca Belair promo, like vignettes that she did, these Mr. Perfect style vignettes that are really cool. I kept one of those because I was really proud of them. I have some like Old Spice t-shirts from that web series, and like a Sammy Award from when myself and a couple other writers produced this award, fake award show that was awesome. But no, I should have kept more things and collected more things. It's just, you know, when you're in that job, it like, even when you're on vacation, it is a part of you. You need like separation of church and state a little bit. At least I do. So I can, because I want to be a full rounded person.
Totally. If I had that job, though, I probably would have locked them in some sort of human zoo. But you do you.
Oh, I will say this. Cards. Uh-huh. Our friend, Phil. It was my birthday during the pandemic. Phil was nice enough to drive. I was living in West Hollywood at the time. He was living like all the other way. He drove in his pickup truck, and his two gifts for me was a cupcake and a pack of WCW cards. And when you look at those like early 90 cards, they, I wish I was at home and I could show them to you. They are, there are some hell haircuts back then.
Strong haircuts. Shout out to Phil Del Costello. Yeah. Good friend.
I don't know if you're going to want to answer this one. I'll just throw it out here. This is from Jason and Christie. Who is actually killing the business? If nobody is, how should one go about killing the business?
Wow.
A lot of killing in that. I guess my question is like, why do you think the business is being killed? Like there are 7 hours of WWE alone on TV, and like A&E is now, or I'm not A&E, AAW has a show on Turner or TNT, and I think they're going to TBS. Mm-hmm. I'm a little behind on my wrestling news, but I think they're going to TBS. If that's wrong, I apologize. And then like WWE has like 3 $1 billion deals with like Universal, Fox, and what's the other one? Oh yeah, Peacock. So it's like it seems like they're doing well.
Like,
are the ratings what they were in the Attitude Era? No, but like if you're a wrestling fan, there's more wrestling than ever, and like the actual in-ring product is arguably the best it's ever been with some of the best athletes who've ever done it.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, yes, you're absolutely right. AEW is now on TBS and TNT. They're called the T-Nets, though, so let's use the appropriate nomenclature when we're
Alex jumping in with it. His wrestling is cable network television.
Yeah, pretty much. But this is very much an outside perspective of the most wrestling I've ever seen is when you invited us to see a wrestling match. But it's as popular as ever, if not more so. I mean, wrestlers are in every single movie. You got John Cena and Dave Bautista in pretty much everything right now, let alone The Rock. So, like, it's clearly, even beyond the wrestling itself, it's a feeder for popular culture right now, and it's big. There you go.
When you said the T-Nets, I had an image of, like, AEW doing their version of Impractical Jokers and me asking Justin as a line producer for a job on it.
I will say we have some more negative comments about wrestling over here on YouTube where somebody says, why has Raw been, OG says, why has Raw been so horrible lately? Better athletes? Yes. Better product? Hardly. This is without lumping on anybody. It almost feels like, to draw the connection between wrestling and comics again, people who love the thing also hate the thing at the same time. Does that seem fair to you?
100%. Like, and like, mind you, I haven't watched any wrestling since I left. I'm trying to like take a little bit of a break, but like, it's definitely a lot like comics in that way. Like when you're watching like, you know, a TV series, it's like, oh, like, I guess we'll see what happens next week. And then like, if somebody loses a match, they then like their whole career is over. Like, as like when I was a fan, like the Daniel Bryan story where he was kept on being put in difficult situations and had to overcome losses. It was such an impactful underdog story. Like same thing like with like Kofi Kingston and Kofi Mania. Like, you know, hopefully like there is a plan and like you see that over a number of weeks and it pays off. Sometimes you have to change those plans on the fly. But you know, I think like there should be a place you want to get to, and hopefully you get there. Occasionally things like that change. Like sometimes a wrestler that you really believe in, they're not connecting with the audience and they're not ready. Like sometimes people get hurt. Sometimes like a segment runs long and like you lose time, and like a match that was supposed to have like 8 minutes has like 5 minutes. So there's a lot of, it takes less things for a wrestling show to go wrong than to go right. Like one thing can throw everything completely off the rails, where it takes like a group of really talented people and a team effort to put on a really great show.
But it sounds like you have a veritable Disney movie of birds behind you. So things can't be going that poorly for you.
Oh, it's, there, when you have your own birds, your life changes in so many ways.
The birds dressed you today, right? Sort of.
Yeah.
You know, Chris.
Do you want me to introduce my bird guy?
Yeah, bring in the bird guy.
Birds, it strikes me.
I'll send you his number.
I don't know if you know this. Birds are animals, and another animal is a panther. And I hear you've been enjoying Black Panther, the comic book.
Wow. Lately. Worked hard for that one.
Smooth.
Yeah,
absolutely smooth. If you want me to do one of those wrestling promos, let me know.
No need for quotes on that, really.
That's some really impressive hosting, and I would say I'm surprised, but I've seen you perform for many years, not just Justin Powell. 100%. To bring all around in my own way, like a jerk. I've always been a fan of Coates and like kind of, you know, sampled his stuff here and there. But like when I heard he was writing Superman for JJ and Warner Brothers, I really did like a big deep dive on all of his comic book work. And like, it was definitely like, it was very cool. Like it reminded me of like stuff like Bendis and Brubaker, where like you have ancillary characters, which I've always cared about and been interested in, but they got like really fleshed out and expanded. And I wish I was on a week earlier when like the last issue came out, but it's one of the best things I've read in a long time, comic or otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's great. It's just a defining run on Black Panther, I think.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Huge world building. To do.
Yeah. It's good stuff. Chris, what's next for you? What are you working on next? Anything you want to plug other than clearing out your comics collection?
I have a couple projects I'm hoping to take out in the fall that I'm working on at the moment. Have a couple of meetings come up that I'm excited about that hopefully I'll be able to announce those things. And other than that, just enjoying the NBA playoffs and writing and,
more tall people.
Trying to enjoy a post-pandemic world. Yeah.
Excellent.
If you want, follow me on the Twitter at the Duniverse. And also, before I go, just a shout out to Tony Morgan, who is a friend of mine, my girlfriend, who loves you guys and follows you guys on Twitter.
That's
so nice. Hey, Tony. Thank you so much for shouting out. And, hey, Tony. And yeah. Chris, thank you. It was so good seeing you. Hopefully
yeah,
those
it was great
birds don't
you,
catch you, carry you away. That would be a real bummer.
Yeah, it would suck. And just again, like you guys, your shows have always meant a lot to me. Anytime you guys need a guest last minute or just a guest overall, or hopefully I'll get to have beers with you when I come to the city in a couple months.
That'd be great. Yeah. Reach out to your friend Justin and just let him know and arrange it or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm good at
Justin's people. Reach out to us.
Yeah. Chris.
And you know what? I'll bring my bird guy.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, bird guy.
Bring your bird guy. Yeah. Chris, have a good night. Good seeing you.
Great seeing your face.
Shout out to the Dunamaniacs at the Duniverse.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you guys went with that. That used to be my my Instagram handle because I was a big Hulk Hogan fan. Then the Gawker tape came out and felt like good to move away from that from a brand.
Third took a step back. Third took a step back.
Yeah.
No. Awesome. Chris, have a good night.
All right, guys. Thanks.
See you later, man.
Yeah, take care of yourself.
All right. There we go. Chris Dunn. Great guy. Man. Always good seeing him.
Two great Chris's on one show.
Unbelievable. Oh. Unbelievable hat trick. Right there. No, it's not. Only two.
Alex crushing the sports analogies as usual.
Booze is getting to you, buddy.
Really classic tiny hat trick.
But we do have some other questions here we can get through. This is from Kevin. Says, what's a category of product tie-in for comics that you think is still ripe for exploration?
Product tie-in. So it's perhaps an underserved side is what we're saying.
Probably not ice cream bars, I would say. We have a ice cream truck that now parks out literally right outside of our house every evening, and they've got that whole thing on lock. There's Spider-Man bars. There's Batman bars. There's probably something else. I don't know, but they got
it. It's funny that they're parking in front of your house. It's almost as if you went there enough and they were like, this guy's sort of sugar freak.
I mean, you know the Simpsons thing where it's like, lady, he's putting my kids through college. It definitely feels 100% 100% like that. Where every day now, my daughter is like, I can use my own money to buy things. We're like, you already had dessert. Come on.
Well, I don't know. That's power. And let me just say, Alex, you buy candy more than almost any other person. The only other person I know that buys more candy than you is next to you right now. It's Pete LePage. What's Pete candy LePage. Free?
Pete LePage, we are doing, we've mentioned this on the podcast before, we're doing a Sweet Tooth podcast called Candymen, which everybody should subscribe to. We're going to review episodes of Sweet Tooth and also review a piece of candy. The only thing that Pete cares about on this podcast is the candy. That is it.
Yeah.
Just getting through to it, to the candy, like smash through everything else. Texts us being like, hey, when do you guys want to tape? Doesn't ask about the taping. He's like, hey, when do you guys want to buy candy? That's the main thing.
Yeah. He's got to get that candy.
I recently get a question from... discovered Toblerone, and now my whole world's fucked up.
Hollywood Homer is asking, by the way, will the Sweet Tooth podcast be in the regular feed? No, it will not. It's going to be in its own feed in the Candymen, a Sweet Tooth podcast feed for now. Maybe we will have something a little extra for Patreon subscribers. We'll see on Friday. But
nice drop.
Thank you. But as is, yeah, if you want to get it, they're going to be rolling out once a day starting on Friday in Candymen, a Sweet Tooth podcast. So check that out.
I love Pete Toblerone. So you had never like taken in chocolate in a triangle form. So that
Dude, I love the whole set. First off, unbelievable chocolate. But then it's got the little part that you break off and you kind of like pez your way through a Toblerone. It's fucking magical.
It's like a Hershey bar, but in a vertical triangle form.
Yeah, triangle. It's got like crunchy candy almonds as well.
Here we go. Now you try to sneak in candy reviews in here. Get where they belong.
I'm just trying to pivot the podcast.
You're trying to get. We're going to be in 1 year. We're going to be like, did we ever talk about comic books? All we do is talk about different jelly beans or whatever the fuck.
Yeah. Jelly Bean Club.
I mean, Pete and I were talking about this before you got here. The thing about Toblerone is it's one of those candy bars that I think only people only get at airports. That's it.
100%.
That's the only place. And every time somebody gets it, they're like, "Oh, this is great. We should get this more often." And then they never do.
And if you guys have another off mic candy conversation without me, I'm going to fucking come for you. Include me in these candy convos.
I don't know. Get off your fucking yacht and get here on time.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. We got a question here.
With a polo shirt on and fucking yacht.
We got a question here from John George. My balls are super hairy. Any suggestion on how I could deal with that? Great question, John. We actually don't have any suggestions.
Manscaped.
We don't have any suggestions because we're not being paid.
Yeah.
Just get paid one time and I'll still fucking bark for them because I tell you what, I trust my balls for those things. They did them right. They did them right.
Man, that's amazing.
Unsolicited.
This is from Stray Bullets. So right now, Batman is no longer a billionaire, lost his mansion, lost his butler, RIP, and lives in a brownstone, eventually leading up to him being declared dead. Maybe eventually this will probably go back to status quo. What's one of your favorite character shakeups that you wish never went back to normal?
Ooh.
I'll tell you, we've talked about this before on the show, but first one that came to mind is Steve Rogers being dead. Just Bucky as Cap was so good. I really like Bucky as Cap. Also liked Sam as Cap later on, but that Brubaker run that eventually pivoted to Bucky being Cap just felt so dark and conflicted. We were, not to keep plugging podcasts, but I think we were talking about this on the Patreon Slack, the idea, or somebody mentioned this. The idea that going into Captain America the First Avenger, coming out the same time as the Ed Brubaker run, it felt like, oh yeah, this is going to be like a dark spy thriller, like the Bucky Cap stuff, and it's not at all. We just talked about Captain America the First Avenger on the Marvel Vision podcast, and that was definitely the bummer for me watching that movie. And then years later, it's gotten better and better the more I've watched it, but that was great. That reinvention was great, and... I don't know. I understand they needed to bring Steve Rogers back. There's been great Steve Rogers stories since then, but that Bucky Cap stuff was so good. I would have been happy if they kept with it.
Similarly, shout out to Ben the Border Collie with Dick Grayson as Batman. I agree. That was a great great run with him there and Damian. But I was going to say Grayson as a as Agent 37, which I thought was a great run of comics.
I would say Cyclops killed Professor X, I would have liked to kind of stayed there where Cyclops is just not a part of it. He's kind of like get away, and then, you know, we don't have to deal with Lollipop Head. That'd be cool.
Great. Wow. So like the saddest time?
Well, or the greatest time. You know, it depends on your perspective.
Here's a question from CT Kook over on YouTube. Who's got the more fuckable spaceship, Beta Rebill's Scuttlebutt or Phantom X's Eva?
You know, I get this question a lot.
I gotta say, Scuttlebutt is transforming and like really coming through here. So, and hopefully a magical love story, but we'll see what happens.
But you're more of a butt guy, right, Pete? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're sort of an ass man. So you love Scuttlebutt. I'm gonna give it up for, I'm gonna go on a third way, the Grant Morrison's Ship Made of Music. I want to get with that music ship.
Oh, yeah. Does Danger count? Danger isn't really a ship. Danger is a room, right?
Yeah, it is a room.
Or it's a person at a time. Okay. A robot
person. Okay, well, let's do that then. Who do you think is the most fuckable person?
Oh, my God. What the Who are you?
I get that question a lot.
Really going to my head, I guess.
We're seeing those taillights.
This is from Hollywood Homer. Will Pete do another Moth show or Alex and Justin do one?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out, they're like bringing Moth storytelling back around. So once that gets going back, and I plan on getting on that for sure.
Is it going to be live or is it going to be virtual? Do you know?
They're doing live ones. They're trying to bring back the live shows. So,
and did you ever release your Moth story that you told? Because I feel like I have a recording of it, I recorded it for you or something.
There was that story that we worked on. But yeah, on YouTube, I have a couple of the Moth stories posted. If you just Google my name, they come up.
Awesome.
Worth a listen. And yes, Alex and I will get together and do a two-man story.
Yes.
We have a lot of tales about Pete. Tell. Yep.
Just crazy.
It'll be a rebuttal to whatever Pete is doing. That's how that works, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Does anyone, it's like a wedding. Does anyone would like to stand up and just shit on the person that just...
is that how weddings work?
I don't think that's how weddings
work. In my hometown, they do.
Thank you, everybody, for coming to this wedding. And now it is time for the rebuttals.
I mean, that's what it is when they're like, would anyone like to stand up and say, don't do this to these people?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. That's fair. All right. We're going to move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
Pete LePage.
Oh, I got to sober up. All right. Here we go.
Not possible.
All right. First of all, just to set this up, say first end up or me or something, you're going to win $25. Take it away, Pete.
Yeah, this is the part we give you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free dollars to Midtown Comics Online. Get yourself some sweet, sweet comics. All we need is a first hand up, and you can win through our trivia contest. All you have to do is get all three questions right in the trivia. We just need a brave volunteer. Oh, John George.
Oh, we got John George.
If he's saying no one's on YouTube, if he's nodding,
he's just
to the
shouting
tube,
out the tube.
He's like, hey, listen, if somebody on the tube wants to get in, if not, he's in.
And obviously, for those of you listening, if you want to jump in on this trivia at any time, come join us on the YouTube link on a Tuesday night. It's so easy to get in here.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. Why don't we do this as well? If you're interested in doing trivia next week or any week past this point, email us comicbookclublive@gmail.com and we can pre-book you for a little bit of trivia.
Oh, that's weird.
That's nice.
Yeah, trivia, but I'll tell you what. Oh, we got I just invited John in, and Easy Reader raised his hand at the same time.
Oh,
there we go. Hey, John.
Easy Reader next week.
We will get you next week. How's it going?
Oh, look at the sweet tooth behind you. That's awesome.
Love it. All right, John, that's how this works.
Who made that?
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. All right. We're going to start this up. Pete, take it away.
All right. Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small... Hey, it's Aaron. Hi, Aaron. Aaron's eating cannolis. Hi. That sounds delicious. All right. A small nod to the legend Paul Mooney.
Put the sound up.
All right. Yeah, we heard you say I can't. Oh, I oh she can God. Eat. Okay. Anyways, question number one. Whose villains will be in variant covers this June coming out for Marvel? Is it A, Spider-Man? B, Wolverine, or is it C, Joey Fatone? So it's either A is correct.
Nailed it.
You are correct. All right, here we go. Question number two, John. And I appreciate you just showing the top of your face there, not the whole thing. What Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comic is coming out in August? Is it A, The Last Ronin? B, The Best of Casey Jones, or is it C, Whoopi Goldberg? Mm. So it's either A, and you were closer to $25, or you can be.
Is it A again?
It is A again.
Wow. Back to back A's.
Crack the code. Crack the code.
Here we go. Last one. Last one. Here we go. Hey, yeah, don't you dare take it farther away from your face. You get it right there. All right, here we go. DC announced a fall crossover event, including Suicide Squad and blank. Is it A, Superman, B, Swamp Thing, or is it C, Donald Faison? So it's either... Yeah, it is B!
Wow.
$25 will be yours.
All right. Congratulations. Thank you won guys. $25 at Midtown Comics. Thanks, John. Aaron, enjoy the cannoli.
That cannoli sounds fun. That's a
great
fun cannoli.
Great to hear Aaron's laugh. I miss Aaron's laugh so much.
Oh, my gosh. Now, what is your secret quiz inside of the quiz, Pete?
That's right. It is the 2006 hit movie, Homie Spumoni.
Now you're just
sure is.
Up. Great. So new comic books come out all the time. We're very excited for them. What are you looking forward to, Pete?
Oh, I'll tell you, I'm very interested in the new Lobo kind of team-up book that is coming out for DC, and I'm excited to talk about that on the stack.
Yeah, what's the name of it?
I believe it's Crushing Lobo?
That's right. You nailed it.
Wow. Number Pete one. Nailing it.
Out today. Yeah, there you go. What about you, Justin? What are you looking forward to?
I am looking forward to another comic that is currently out, The Nice House on the Lake.
Ooh.
Got you, Alex. I knew it was coming. Man, this is a good comic by James Tynion IV. Fresh out from DC today. Really great premise. Just expertly done in the setup. Really enjoyed it. And Alex, I'll give you a minute to hastily pick something else. Because I want to shout out Deadly Class. Deadly Class right now is so good. Issue 46 came out, or is coming out. And that is a great comic. Like, Remender's just, he and Wes Craig are just right in their prime with this. Despite the fact that it's already been, they've done such a long run and it's been a TV show.
I mean, other than Nice House on the Lake, and I did, I think my actual... most anticipated a comic of the week, which is wild to me, is Batman Fortnite 0. Number four, just
dude!
Because I have been loving that book so much. Wow. But to shout out something non-DC, I wanted to call out the Invincible Red Sonja number two. Just because Jimmy Palmiotti, Amanda Connor, Moritat on art, that is such a good team. And they're writing the hell out of a Red Sonja story. So I've really been enjoying a lot. All of those things are going to be at our Stack podcast, which comes out Wednesday at 9 a.m. in the Comic Book Club feed and in its dedicated Stack feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. We want to thank our amazing guests, the two Chris's. Chris Walker, check out Urbanime. Relic is live now, and more titles are coming down the pike. Also, Chris Dunn, check him out online at, what was it, Dunnamaniac?
The underscore Dunniverse. Yes.
The underscore Dunniverse. There you go. But thanks for him coming on. That was awesome. Next week, we have a huge show for you guys. Very big show. Wait, what?
Justin made that drawing of Sweet Tooth behind John?
Yeah, Vegan Tooth.
Wow, man. Nice work.
Remember?
All right, wait. I want to plug the show that we have next week because it's a big one. We are going to have Joshua Williamson is going to be here to talk about the final issue of Birthright that is coming out. So that's very exciting. We're going to talk
about
the whole run.
You're going to lose your mind, dude.
And not only that, we're also going to have Michael W. Conrad and Becky Cloonan are going to be here to talk about their Wonder Woman run, which has been amazing.
This is a huge show.
Definitely tune in. Also, Candyman, a Sweet Tooth podcast kicking off on Friday every single day for 8 days straight. Marvel Vision, a Marvel podcast. Is doing a MCU rewatch and then kicking off with Loki next week. Riverdale After Dark doing special episodes all over the place. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the other shows that we do. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, follow, and listen. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. Until next time, raise a glass to Gotham City. Good night, everybody.
Yeah, back to the yacht, King.